just doesn't look the part, does he? I love the description, a 90-pound weakling with asthma. Steve Rogers isn't who the military would have picked to be a hero, but the doctor knew better. Because the doctor knew, I have a formula, I have a serum that I'm going to give him, that all those physical limitations, they're going to be gone, and once they're all gone, we're going to have Captain America. By the way, that's the real Captain America. The question is, what did the doctor see? What did the doctor see in Steve Rogers and let him think, this guy is a hero? Well, here's what he saw. Here's a people that make sacrifices for the good of others. All the other soldiers, when they thought it was a live grenade, ran. Not Rogers. He was willing to sacrifice himself in order to protect his troop. Heroes are people that have a mission and accomplish the mission no matter the personal cost. It doesn't matter what it takes. It doesn't matter what I have to give up. It doesn't matter what I have to leave behind. I have a mission, and I'm going to do it, even if it costs me everything. Here's the people that inspire us. I mean, we look at their lives and we want to be like them. We want to mimic what they're doing. Heroes, they don't just save the world. They make it better. And the doctor looked at Captain Steve Rogers and he said, you know what? This is the guy. No, he doesn't have all the physical attributes, and yeah, he does have some medical problems, and yeah, he's kind of the run of the litter, but his heart is huge. And we can fix all the stuff on the outside, but this inside, you just can't teach that. So it didn't matter that he couldn't pass the test, that he couldn't run 10 miles. It didn't matter that he couldn't climb a flagpole, or that he couldn't even do jumping jacks, and I look and he's going to pass out. He was the one that became the hero. Now, unfortunately, the guy that we've been studying, Samson, well, he was kind of like the other guy that was standing there that was doing the jumping jacks, the big brawny dude that seemed to have all the right things. And well, Samson, he had a hero start. He was the guy that was promised. He was, now his birthday announcement was made by an angel in the West, and they said, Samson's on the way. And man, he had a hero's power. Man, he was strong. We've already watched 2 weeks of how that power came on him and how he could do these heroic acts. He had a hero's villains. He had the Philistines out there, and God gave him a mission to deliver Israel from the Philistines. But he lacked the hero's heart. He just didn't have it. You see, he was self-centered. He was arrogant. And he was vengeful. That's how Samson's been described in the first few stories that we've looked at. Samson is not a hero. You see, he was physically strong, but he was morally weak. And well, this is going to be the downfall. This is where it begins. And today we are going to look at the beginning of the end as we look at probably one of the more familiar stories in the Bible. If you've been around church any length of time, this is probably a story that you've heard. If you haven't been at church, Hollywood has done this story in the past. We're going to look at the story of Samson and Delilah. And more importantly, we're going to look at the misplaced power of Samson. And we're going to be in Judges chapter 16, so if you have your copy of God's Word, you can pull it out. If you want to follow along, you can pull out the one in the pew rack, and the Judges is in the Old Testament. We're going to be in chapter 16. We're going to look at 20 verses, although you can follow along on the screen. But let me just read you verses 1 through 3, because here's what we're going to find out. When it comes to Samson, same song, just a different tune. Same old problems. Just listen to this. One day, Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute. He went in to spend the night with her. The people of Gaza were told, Samson is here. So they surrounded the place and lay in wait for him all night long at the city gate. They made no move during the night, saying, at dawn, we will kill him. But Samson lay there only until the middle of the night. Then he got up and took hold of the doors of the city gate, together with the two posts, and tore them loose, bar and all. He lifted them on his shoulder and carried them to the top of the hill that faces Hebron. And you know, maybe we want to talk about the power, but that's not what I'm interested in. This man lacks a moral compass, don't you think? Now, here's the problem. Are you more bothered at the fact that he went to see a prostitute? Or are you more bothered by the fact that, you know what? It doesn't seem weird that he's going to see a prostitute, even though he's the leader of God's people. This is his story. I mean, I'm not shocked by that statement, because I've already read the first two chapters in his story, and this doesn't surprise me. But it should. That should bother the living daylights out of me, but it just doesn't. And you know, he's the leader of God's people, and so the Philistines decide, now we have him trapped, and they make a plan to capture him. And like a bad comic book cliche, their plan is foiled by his great power. And now they look like fools yet again, because here they are, sound asleep, and he picks up their entire... By the way, we're not talking about like a gate like you see on some... These gates were probably massive. They probably weighed tons. And he just kind of ripped it up and just carried it off almost in Incredible Hulk style and set it up on the hill just to mock them that, you can't catch me. You can't trap me. I'm Samson. But what I need you to see is he was using his gift from God to serve himself. I mean, instead of ripping up gates, he should be out there ripping down the high places where they are worshiping other gods in Israel. Shouldn't that be his job? Instead of out here mingling with the Philistines in such a way that he's morally misguided, what he should be doing is rallying the nation of Israel around God. But that's not what he's doing. He's only got one focus. He doesn't care about the world he was sent to save. He doesn't care about making the world a better place. He's only concerned with himself. Why? Because in case you didn't get the memo, Samson's not a hero. I mean, he's a good story. He's a great object lesson, as we're going to begin to watch today. But you know what? Really? Is this the guy you hold up to our kids and say, yeah, this is the guy I want you to be like? This is the person that I want you to mimic. This is the person that, no. While he's got all of the physical attributes, something's just wrong. And the funny thing is he's not a hero, and eventually the Philistines just keep watching, and eventually they decide, we know how to get him. We're going to get him by using his weakness. We're going to get him by the same thing that we always see. See, they've been watching Samson's life. And they got him figured out. In verses 4 through 6, this is what we see. Sometime later, he fell in love with a woman. Okay, Samson, here we go again. Haven't we already taken this ride once with him? You know, he's in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek. By the way, just so you know, the valley of Sorek is not in Israel. We're in Philistine territory again. So he's in love with yet another Philistine woman, whose name was Delilah. And the rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. So there were 24 Philistine tribes that would have had a ruler in biblical times. You do the math. They are going to give her 1,100 shekels of silver per ruler. That's how valuable the bounty on Samson is at this point. And while obviously Delilah didn't love him, because she said, okay, sounds good to me. And you might wonder, why did they take this route? Well, you remember back at the party? You remember that party that we attended with Samson? And he made up that ridiculous lying riddle. And how did they get the riddle answer? Well, they had his would-be wife woo it out of him. You know, needling him and just keep going at him little by little until finally he told her everything. And well, they figured it worked once. He's strong, but he doesn't seem to be the sharpest tool in the shed, so maybe it'll work again. So they find out his weakness, and they go at it. And well, do you remember that 1960s Batman show? It always came in two parts. Now, I watched it as reruns, by the way. By the time I came along, I did not watch the originals. It came on in the afternoons. I was watching it in reruns. I'm not that old, although I'm close. I hadn't been off the air very long. But they were always in two parts, and they had the first part where they're figuring out who the villain is, and then right at the end of the first part, what's always there? It's a trap. The heroes find themselves. I never figured out why, when they had them all tied up in these elaborate contraptions, why they didn't just take their masks off. I mean, wouldn't that have just been the easy answer? Oh, you've got them all tied, just shoot them. I mean, it would have just solved all of your problems, but they never did this. They went in these elaborate traps that they went into, and eventually the traps unwound, and Batman and Robin escaped, and then the next part, the same bat time, same bat channel, the next day you came back, and then they finished the story, and Batman and Robin won, and it was a trap, and that's exactly what this is, but I'm not going to read verses 7 to 15 to you. I'm just going to give you the highlights. You see, three times Delilah asked Samson his secret. Okay, so he comes to her. And you have to remember, this isn't like all on the same day. Okay, we're going over multiple weeks here. So she's working on this. So she's probably making some home-cooked meals. And she's buttering them up. And she's talking to and she's working hard at this. But we go through three cycles of this. And she asks him his secret. And well, Samson does what Samson does well. He lies to her. But when he lies to her, each time he gets a little closer to the truth. Each time he goes, he moves just a little further along until he gets to that point that she finally comes back and, well, Delilah tries exactly what he tells her. He says, tie me up with new ropes, and she does that. He says, braid my hair, and she does that. So each time she does it, and, well, the Philistines show up, and Samson beats them up, and arrogant, clueless, blind Samson, or whatever word you want to throw out there for him, never stops to think, maybe these things are all connected. Maybe these Philistines keep showing up because she's telling them. Maybe I keep being tied up or bound because she's doing this. He never stops to think, but I know why he doesn't think, remember? Same old problem. I want it. I want my relationship with Delilah. I love her. I deserve it. Yeah, she's the right one for me. Haven't we heard this story one time before already? And I can handle it. I mean, none of their traps are working, so obviously me and God, we're all good, and I can handle this, God. Yeah, you keep telling yourself that, Samson. Because eventually on the fourth time, Delilah comes back to him. She hits him with the sob story and the you don't trust me and sheds the tears and you know, he's done. And in verses 17 through 19, this is what he tells her. So he told her everything. No razor has ever been used on my head, he said, because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. Really? Really? Wow, okay. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me. And I would become as weak as any other man. When Delilah had saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, come back once more. He has told me everything. So the rulers of the Philistines return with the silver in their hands. Man, she's about to get paid. She's done her job. And after putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair. And so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Now, I read this verse, and the first thing I want to say is, she says he told him everything. And I sort of wonder, did he really mean that he tell him her everything? Because I don't believe he did. I mean, he told her about being a Nazarite. That's obvious. I bet that took some explaining. Especially when you got to the part that you ain't supposed to come in contact with no dead things, because guess what? He's been killing and killing and killing, and it's what he's been doing. And I'm sure she had lots of questions in that area. I wonder. Think he told her about the lion? I mean, he didn't tell his parents about the lion. He didn't tell the parents any of that. He didn't tell them about the honey. You think he mentioned the party? You know, the party where he made the ridiculous bet that ultimately because he got all upset because his wife wooed him into telling the secret, and then after told the secret, he left his wife and eventually came back, and that got his wife burned to death. You think he shared that with Delilah? He might have left that little fact out. Might have been good for his relationship. You think he really told her about God? As I listen to his telling, doesn't God almost seem to be an afterthought in his story? I mean, he says he's been dedicated to God from the womb. Really? Not the Samson I saw. Do you think that he told her the fact that his hair on his head was not the source of his strength, but the last remaining symbol of his commitment? When I first arrived in Charlottesville and started working with teenagers, of course, as the youth guy, you have to figure out where your kids are. So we had the conversation, the "Are you a Christian?" conversation. And I'm not one to judge. I just wanted to see where they were spiritually. And I got an answer that honestly just drove me crazy. Because kid for kid, remember we're dealing with kids that are over 12, and we started having the spiritual conversation. You know what the answer they kept giving me? I've been baptized. And you know what I wanted to say? And? I mean, okay, yeah. Baptism is important. It's the reason that we do this. But you do understand. It's a physical symbol of a commitment that you've made in your heart. If you go in that baptismal without that commitment, then you know what you get? Wet. Because it is nothing more than the physical symbol. Something has to happen on the inside as you go into a commitment. And as Samson reveals his secret, he identifies the hair as the source of his commitment. Interesting, he gave credit to the symbol, not his God. But here's what I want to tell you. He knew. He knew the hair was not it. And I am going to go through the next little section of scripture here, and I want to let you understand why he knew. Because after he went and he told Delilah his secret, and then she went to work, and they cut his hair, it's the scariest statement in the Bible. God had finally had enough. And he left the room, and he took Samson's strength with him. It wasn't the haircut, folks. And now I'm going to show you how I know it was not the haircut, and it was so important. You see, in verse 20, we go from the scariest statement in the Bible. You can go ahead and put Christmas lights around this statement if you're in your own Bible. You can highlight, mark the stars, gold, whatever it is, mark this. This is absolutely the saddest statement ever made in the Bible. Then she being Delilah, called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, notice what he thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know the Lord had left. Let that roll through your brain for a second. He did not know that the Lord had left. Now, as I go back and I look at that, again, we're back into the same cycle. The hair has been cut and the Philistines are back. And Delilah calls out, "Oh, Samson, dear, somebody's here to see you." And Samson realizes who it is and he awoke. Now, guys, I don't have a lot of hair. Okay, I have it for quite some time. But you guys know that usually when it gets into the colder months, sometimes you let it grow a little bit longer, even to the point that it gets curled up. And so what you're doing is you're letting it grow down to keep the wind from going down your collar in the winter.
And so you get it a little bit longer. Not real long, just you couldn't probably can't even notice, but it kind of curls up at the end. Mine does at least, and it gets a little longer. But you let it get, when summertime comes and I cut it and it gets up above the collar length again, that little bit of hair getting cut off, I notice it. You can almost feel your head's gotten lighter. No, I didn't lose any common sense. It's the hair being cut. And I hate to tell you this. He had 7 braids of hair on his head. And it was cut off, and he woke up, and it's gone. You don't think he realized it was gone? How do I know? Because guess what he said to himself? Oh, well, the hair is gone, but I'm going to go out and shake myself free, and it's going to be just like it's always been. You see, Samson knew it was never the source of his strength. He thought, I'm going to go out because just like always, God is going to come to my rescue. God is going to come in. It's me and God. And you know what? It's all going to be okay. The sad thing is, well, I might have noticed he got a haircut. He never even noticed that God was left close to him. Wow. Has he come that far? That the man who he said he's been dedicated to, the being that he's been dedicated to since the womb, that he left, and Samson doesn't even miss him. Isn't that sad? I mean, Samson was not the hero. And this time, it wasn't going to be the same. Hey, my microphone is falling off, so we're just going to put that right in there. Hey, Caleb, turn down pulpit mic. Turn up pulpit mic and cut down lapel mic. That's okay. So, not this time. Because Samson's about to fall. This is what verse 21 says. Then the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they set him grinding grain in the prison. I want you to see how far he falls. See, Samson was indeed spiritually blind, but the Philistines now make him physically blind as well. Shrewd move for your enemy. If I'm going to make sure that I take you out while I got you down, I'm going to blind you and take away your vision so that you lose sight of your mission. Man, that's a good move. He was imprisoned. It says they put bronze shackles on him and they threw him into a cell. Man, they didn't even need to do that at this point, though. He's like the 90-pound weakling without the super serum formula. He's throwing no threat to them. And here's the point. He was forced into slavery. And I look at what the Philistines did to him, and I begin to wonder, isn't this sort of what Satan does to us? God's heroes? The people that are supposed to have the message to go out and lead the world to Christ, the ones that are supposed to not just save the world, but make it better by teaching people. And we get so caught up in our own lives, and we go and visit the things that we want to do and do the things that we want to do, and we forget all about our mission, and the first thing you know, we've lost our vision. We've forgotten about the people out in the world. We're too busy. We're imprisoned in our own lives, whatever that is, and then we're just become slaves to the same old things that we've done our entire life, and nothing ever changes. And that's a scary thought for me, but it leads to a question that I just got to know. Would you know? When you get to that point, would you know that God is tired of the game? Do you know at the point at which God has had enough with the way that we're doing things and he just finally leaves the room? Would you notice that point? Or are we maybe a bit more like Samson than we want to admit? We're just so tied up in our own life that if God went on vacation, honestly, I wouldn't even notice. Nothing would change. Does that scare you a little bit? I think about that. Has my relationship gotten so distant from God that I wouldn't even know that God's not blessing what I'm doing anymore? I wouldn't even know that I've lost sight of what I'm supposed to be doing. I wouldn't even know any of this. And I began to ask myself that question, would I know? Now, I'm sure you've noticed your bulletins look a little different this morning. On purpose. I was coming down there, but I know this mic is dead, and I know that'll ruin the recording, so I'm going to stay put right here for right now so that I have the benefit of the pulpit mic, because I want you to hear this. We're not going to do our standard invitation. But if you're here today and you don't know who Christ is, then let me encourage you. Get to know him. And I can give you a very easy way to do that. Bud and Dean, raise your hands. See these guys? These are two of our elders, our third elders downstairs. If you have an interest in knowing who Christ is, then you know what? Find one of these guys after church and ask them to sit down and show me. They'll be happy to do it. No problem. And no questions asked. They'll show you what it means to be a Christian. But when I say we're not going to do the standing invitation, you don't have to stand up. The worship team's not coming back. I've got a song I want you to listen to. And I do realize that sometimes songs get a little difficult for you to listen to, so I've done you a favor. The words are going to be on the screen. And I just want you to ask yourself, have I come so far in my hero's life that God has become irrelevant in my own life? And like Samson, if he left, I wouldn't even know. I'm going to say a word of prayer, and the video is going to play. And when the video is done, service is dismissed. Showing you forth divine.
my flesh cry out, I don't need you anymore. Oh, would I follow you? Could I be restored? I wonder, will I ever learn? I wonder, would I know?